Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, March 3rd. Obviously, Super Tuesday is a crucial day in the Democrats' drive to defeat Donald Trump, and we're very happy to have a special guest now with just the right experience to lend some expertise. David Plouffe was Barack Obama's campaign manager in 2008, and we know how that turned out. He then went on to be a senior advisor in the Obama White House. David Plouffe also has a book being released today with the straightforward title, A Citizen's Guide to Beating Donald Trump. David, we're so glad you're giving us some Super Tuesday time. Thanks for coming on.
It's great to be with you, Brian.
The big news in the last day, as you well know, is Buttigieg and Klobuchar and Beto O'Rourke all endorsing Joe Biden last night at a Biden rally in Texas. But these candidates all dropped out because they were getting little support. What effect do you think the endorsements can have on the outcomes today?
Well, it's probably been the best 48 hours of Joe Biden's political life, but he needed that because he was down to his last political life. So, you know, Bernie Sanders is very strong in most of the states that are voting today. He's obviously got a great organization. He's had the money to advertise. And so he's going to do very well today. Joe Biden, the question is, can he survive Super Tuesday, in my view? So, you know, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke deciding to endorse him can't hurt. And so for voters who are actually voting today as opposed to voted early, you know, Biden, I think, will pick up some of that support. So the real question is, to get delegates, you need to hit 15% at the statewide level or the congressional district level. I think there was a question a few days ago whether Biden would be viable in places like California, Minnesota. I'd be surprised if he's not viable, so that's great. But this really comes down to how big of a lead from a delegate standpoint does Bernie Sanders have coming out of today? And we'll know that not tonight, actually. It'll take a while to count the votes
in California. You think it'll take too longer tonight?
Yeah, I think we won't know the actual delegate picture for a couple of days.
Even with California's early voting, it could be that half of the votes cast in California have already been cast, right?
Right. So, well, I think we'll know who's viable statewide, but to allocate them down at the congressional district level, Texas does it at the state senate district level, it may take a while. But the picture will be clear, I think, by the morning.
And just to give our listeners a little viewer's guide to the numbers, I know you've been talking about how it's really going to matter how close to Bernie Sanders Joe Biden comes out of tonight with in delegates. What range are we talking about?
Such an important question, because I'll start, Brian, with once someone gets a delegate lead of any size, it's hard to erase it. Why is that? So let's say we get down to a two-person race eventually in March between Biden and Sanders. Biden wins a state 54 to 46. You basically get the same amount of delegates. So the way the delegates work, you only get net a lot of delegates if you're winning by some margin. So I think if the margin is 150 or less after tonight, where Biden's trailing Sanders by that margin, I think you could credibly say if I win Florida big, Georgia big, Mississippi, I'm able to catch up. If it's more than that, I don't think it's mathematically possible. So this is where I think the strong campaign Bernie Sanders has run, his organization in all of these states, is going to, you know, make a huge test for Joe Biden. So I think that's the number to keep in mind. Now, 150 to me is even a lot. If you're Joe Biden, I'd rather be close within 100, so that not everything has to go right after today to catch up. But Bernie Sanders should exit today with a, you know, with a delegate lead that is really all that matters in terms of our nomination fight.
I've been thinking of Super Tuesday as presenting a real paradox for the moderate lane candidates. On the one hand, there are so many delegates at stake, and it's still so early, they might as well stay in just through today to see how they do before dropping out. But on the other hand, if they do that, they could divvy up the delegates so much that they would make Sanders the prohibitive favorite in the way you were just describing, which, at least from their perspective, they don't want to do. Do you think they were grappling with that as a kind of paradox?
I think for Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, Tom Steyer, I mean, I think their decision was, first and foremost, do they have a path? Less about, you know, is there a way we could help Joe Biden or hurt Bernie Sanders? Because I think they didn't want to ask people for money or time if it was clear they weren't going to win. So I think given that, they decided that, you know, Amy Klobuchar and Buttigieg have both spoken, whether you agree with it or not, that they think Bernie Sanders is not as strong a nominee as some of the others on the stage. So they've decided to throw their support to Joe Biden. And I think that'll matter. I think the question coming out of tonight will be, what does Mike Bloomberg do? And what does Elizabeth Warren do? They're both going to get delegates tonight. But I think it's hard to see a scenario where they're going to be the top two at the end of this process. So, you know, they'll have to have some hard discussions and decisions as well.
Let's talk about each one of those a little more. The only one not to drop out and endorse Biden in that lane, if we're talking about a moderate lane, and that's actually a real thing, which I never know if it is, but was Michael Bloomberg. How do you see the reasons that he alone among that group chose to stay in?
Listen, he has spent more money on advertising than Barack Obama spent in either one of his presidential elections nationally, okay? So I'm sure he wants to actually get to some votes and see how he does. But I think Biden's rise, his debate performances, I think Michael Bloomberg's ability to really reach into the African-American community has been severely compromised. So he's going to get some delegates tonight. But the question is, do you have a plausible case to be the nominee? I think Michael Bloomberg needed Joe Biden to lose South Carolina to become the main alternative to Bernie Sanders. That didn't happen. So I'd suspect that they don't see a pathway to the nomination post today. I think with Elizabeth Warren, she's going to get some delegates as well. They believe there's a convention play where if the convention is deadlocked, maybe Elizabeth Warren becomes the compromise candidate. I just find it hard to believe that you're going to skip over the number one delegate leader, whether that's Bernie or Biden, and the number two, and go down to someone who might be third or fourth. I just don't think that's going to happen.
I saw you say on MSNBC that it's puzzling to you why Elizabeth Warren hasn't done better.
Yeah.
And I agree. I would have thought after 2016 and all the racism and misogyny that motivate Democrats against Trump and considering the various strengths of the candidates coming in, that we'd be in probably a Warren Harris Klobuchar world right now. And Klobuchar's stock went up after the way she dealt with Brett Kavanaugh when he was inappropriate with her. Not a Biden, Bloomberg, Bernie world. What did you think would happen with Elizabeth Warren?
Well, as a political practitioner, I just look at her debate performances, her speech making, her interviews. She's organized a really good campaign, struggled with money for a while, but that's picked up. So I said on MSNBC, I'm serious about this, you know, I hope political scientists and academics really look at this. You know, my suspicion is there's a hangover from 16 and too many voters think a woman can't win. It makes me sad to say that if that's true, but I think we really need to analyze that. Because if you just look at, like, on paper, the strength she brings to the race and how she's performed, it's hard to reconcile that with. Now, you know.
And when you say how, let me just jump in, because you say how she's performed. I mean, she's also, by so many analysts' lights, won most of the debates.
She's been super strong in debates, super strong in interviews. She's got a crisp message. But, you know, she hasn't been able to break out of, like, the mid-teens. And that's why I'm so confident. I said Saturday night, this is a two-person race. Why could I be so confident? The only two people with the ability is to really move, let's say, north of 40% in this primary, I think, are Sanders and Biden. I think it's hard to see Bloomberg or Warren being able to grow to that extent.
If Bloomberg or Warren win some delegates, but later see they can't win the nomination, can they just give their delegates to either Biden or Sanders before the convention?
Can't give them. So they can say, I'm leaving the race, and I hope that the delegates I've earned go to the candidate I'm supporting. But that's up to those individual pledges. I think it's fair to assume that a good percentage of the delegates that Warren or Mayor Pete, he has some delegates, mm-hmm. or Bloomberg gets, will go in that direction. But there's no guarantee of that. And that's what's interesting. There's so much focus on if a candidate doesn't get a majority of the pledged delegates, what do the superdelegates do mm-hmm. in Milwaukee? Important. But depending on how well Warren and Bloomberg do tonight, they're going to have a chunk of pledged delegates, and those do need to get reallocated, but the candidate doesn't control them. They can request politely, but they cannot dictate.
And I've seen at least one poll that included a second choice option where where just as many Buttigieg voters said their second choice was Sanders as said their second choice was Biden, casting, you know, additional doubt on that whole issue of the lanes.
Yeah, the lane thing, you know, breaks down a little bit when you look at that. I was always surprised when I was involved in politics, you know, deeply in presidential races, for second, third choices. They surprise you. So, yes, I mean, so think about California today, Texas, Virginia, North Carolina, some of the key states today. Some of the people who 2 days ago were going to vote for Pete Buttigieg, how many will vote for Biden? I think over 50%. but nowhere near 100. Mm-hmm. Some of them will still vote for Bloomberg, maybe, and some will vote for Bernie. So it's never that neat and tidy.
From Senator Sanders' point of view, with all these endorsements now, if he says the Democratic establishment is conspiring against him, he wouldn't be wrong, would he?
Well, there is no smoky back room where puppet strings are being pulled. You know, Pete Buttigieg made his decision. Amy Klobuchar made his decision. There's no grand poobah making that happen. So my concern about Bernie Sanders, I thought, was very strong in his rally he did last night, saying, I welcome people from Amy's campaign and Pete's campaign. That's the right message. I think saying everyone who's not with you is the establishment, African-American voters, just average citizens, I would be careful about that, because to be the nominee, Bernie Sanders is going to have to grow his base, and he needs some of those people. And if he's the nominee, he'll need all of them to be president. So I think that it's a good line, but it's not true. I mean, I wish we were that organized. We're not. Not to beat Bernie, just to win elections. I mean,
There was a lot of pressure from Democratic big money donors and party leaders who are actually, you know, at the top of the DNC, pushing Klobuchar and Buttigieg to get out in the last few days, even pushing Bloomberg unsuccessfully, from what I heard, and actually endorse Biden?
Listen, these candidates had to make a super hard decision, and I think it was predicated on their own path. And, you know, if Amy Klobuchar and Mayor Pete, the decision they made, I don't know who they talked to, but that is a super personal decision that they came to. So again, I think it's a neat storyline to suggest that in Washington, D.C., strings are being pulled. That's not really the way this works. And the truth is, Joe Biden is now a threat to be the nominee, largely because of African-American voters. So I'd be careful about calling them part of a corrupt establishment. They are the backbone of the Democratic Party.
And on electability against Trump, the Bernie people would argue that recent history suggests that movement candidates win while safe candidates lose. Trump won over Clinton, movement candidate. Your candidate, Barack Obama, hope and change, movement candidate, beat the safe pick Republicans, McCain and then Romney. Kerry was the safe candidate. Democrats rejected Howard Dean and his movement. And what happened? Kerry lost to George Bush at the height of the Iraq War debacle. It's easy to forget just how desperately Democrats wanted him out. So why wouldn't all that history suggest that Sanders has a real electability case to make, to at least be taken seriously in that debate?
Well, he's making it, so we'll see if Democratic voters in enough numbers accept it, just as Biden's going to make his. I'd say what's electable changes every 4 years. I think sometimes we view electability through a very dated lens. So I think that to win the presidency, and I talk a lot about this in my book, it's going to require a bunch of different groups of voters, true swing voters. Some of those are the legendary Trump-Obama voters. Some of those are suburban voters that voted for Clinton that are flirting with Trump. Registration targets, turnout targets. Trump is president in part because so many people went third party. How do we hold on to them? As citizens, we have a role to work all those groups of voters to make sure we get enough to win, but we have to have a candidate. So you might say Sanders, he has passion amongst young voters and he's run a really great campaign, but he's also got to win over suburban voters. Biden has to, maybe he's got a little more strength in the suburbs, but he's got to drive turnout. So that's my point. Whoever comes out of this, Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, is going to need all of us to rally behind them. And what's electable? Now, Democrats who say Bernie can't win the general election, I reject that. That's what campaigns are for. And I can see Bernie Sanders winning the presidency. The other thing I'd say is whoever it is, though, we do need to have a wide electoral college map. We don't want to just be having to win the three states we target. So Arizona, North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, in addition to Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, need to be part of that mix.
I've heard that two other big names could potentially endorse Biden by the end of the day, formally or informally. Kamala Harris, whose endorsement could be meaningful since her state of California, of course, has the most delegates at stake today, and maybe even President Obama himself. What can you tell us about either, including your old boss?
Well, I think Barack Obama I think wants to let a lot more states and a lot more voters vote. And, you know, at the end of this, we're going to have to bring the party together. And I think it's better to, it's easier to bring the party together if you've not played a role in the race. So my suspicion is that won't change. I don't know what Kamala Harris is going to do. Obviously, it would be a great endorsement for Joe Biden. Now, people are voting in California right now. A lot voted early. So we shouldn't overstate the effect. That's the thing. For Biden to really take full advantage of his momentum from South Carolina, he's going to have to overperform today on Election Day vote. I went through this in 08. I mean, Hillary Clinton had a big lead us on in California. She dominated us in early vote. Our sense is we won Election Day vote in California, but it wasn't enough. So Bernie Sanders has a bunch of votes in the bank right now, and that should, I think, you know, really help him in terms of the ultimate delegate yield.
Your book is called A Citizen's Guide to Beating Donald Trump, not a professional politician's guide. And I see that much of it is really aimed at ordinary Democrats to do much more this year than vote. Where would you start?
Yeah, that the audience, I hope people who are deeply involved in politics enjoy the book and learn a thing or two or have an idea. But it's, I think the average citizen's like, you know, what can I do? Does it make a difference? A lot of people maybe have donated, which is important, but they haven't done other things. And so for me, it's one, take care of your own business, your own registration, everyone in your friends and family circle. Are they registered? If they can vote early in the general, make sure they do. And really make sure everybody in your circle has a plan for involvement. If you live in a battleground state, are you going to become a volunteer leader? If you don't live in a battleground state, are you going to travel to one? Are you going to make phone calls? Are you going to write postcards? How are you using your own personal social media network? I mean, everyone
has people's individual social media can make a difference.
The supercomputer we have in our pocket, the phone, is a powerful content device. If you've got a neighbor who voted for Donald Trump last time and is voting for the Democrat this time, take a video. You know, share content you see that you find interesting. Fight back against the lies and disinformation. So, you know, they have Fox, they have Sinclair, they've got Breitbart, they have Putin. They have an incumbent president who's maniacally obsessed with getting reelected, who's going to have billions of dollars. We don't have that. What we need is millions of citizens to get involved, unite the party, and make the case each and every day to the voters that will decide this election. And, you know, if that doesn't happen, we're not going to win. I really believe that.
So let's end on this question of social media and the digital world generally, because looking back to 2008, when you were Obama's campaign manager, didn't you have a big digital advantage? This is the way I remember it, that you had the young techies who built a social media messaging advantage over McCain, and it happened again in 2012 over Romney. And I think Trump is said to have that advantage now. How would you look back on 2008, and how would you talk about today in that respect?
Well, it was very quaint. I mean, you know, the website was our main driver in 08. Wow. By 12, the website was still important, but more work was being done on Facebook. So now the social media networks are the central battlefield. Trump's campaign is run by digital marketers. I think Trump understands how to communicate in this world, blunt force. He doesn't think about the speech he's going to give or the policy he's going to drop, the interview he's going to give. He just communicates directly to people. So I think that our nominee is going to have to do a good job themselves. But how do we win the social media war? We win it by millions and millions of Americans using the networks that they have to post content, to fight back. And I know that can be frustrating. And you're not sure that it's having any impact. That's the other thing I really capture in my book, I hope, is when you think about your own effort, it can seem small. When you think about it in aggregation, it's how we win the election. And so if we're all sharing content, if we're all talking to voters, maybe in a day you go canvassing in Pennsylvania or Michigan and you think you maybe had an impact on two people, that can seem super small. But if 5,000 other people are doing it that day and every weekend, that's the win number. And so the math here is compelling. Just don't get frustrated because, again, the effort can seem small. And when you get involved in social media, you know, your uncle who's a big Trump supporter is going to fire back at you, but you just got to blow by that.
David Plouffe, among his claims to fame, campaign manager for Barack Obama in 2008. And we know how that turned out. His new book, A Citizen's Guide to Beating Donald Trump. Thank you so much for giving us some Super Tuesday time.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation, too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.